All right, hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 199. I am your host, Vince. Over there is your host, Phil.
Yo.
Hey, all right, in this episode, we are talking about the news of the world, starring Mr. Tom Hanks. Before we do all that, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on all, or at least most, streaming services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and the like. Make sure that you subscribe, make sure that you tell your friends, and leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @ThreeDrinksInPod. You can like us on Facebook, and you can email us at ThreeDrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. And do me a favor and keep an eye on our social media accounts over the next week or so. We're going to be posting an opportunity for you guys to ask questions of us as we approach a milestone with our 200th episode. So we have a few ideas in the works for that, but we're curious to hear from you, the fan.
Yeah. You know who you are.
As to what you might wonder about us and what we do and or don't do, or so, yes, take a keep your eyes peeled for all of that. Mm-hmm. All right, the news of the world.
So yeah, whenever I hear that title, I think of like those old 1940s newsreels in black and white. Everyone's pitching in, buy war bonds, you know, like stuff like that.
So, how do I start this? So let's, in brief, discuss just the basic plot of News of the World, for those of you who don't know, and I don't know why you would not know if you were just going to listen to this, but the News of the World stars Tom Hanks and a little blonde girl from Sweden, I think.
German,
okay. Tom Hanks is a Civil War veteran of the losing side who used to own a printing press back in San Antonio, but lost everything in the war and now travels the Texas countryside reading the news to people who will listen to it. And in the process of doing so, comes across a young girl who we presume was kidnapped by Indians. And they, which is a common practice among different tribes in the American West, where they would, murder a bunch of people and then they would kidnap one or two people from that family and then kind of subsume them into the tribe. And he finds this girl and basically takes it upon himself to get her back to where she needs to be. And hijinks and danger and bonding ensue. So, but let's talk about the title of this movie, which is Bad. I want to say it is a bad title. Because it doesn't tell you anything about the movie. And while it is related to certain aspects of the plot, it's not like, I mean, is it? Is there a thematic catch to it that I just didn't sort of sink my teeth into? Is there sort of an ironic thing to it? Or is it just, I don't know. I just think it's a bad title for this movie. Your thoughts? Your turn.
I feel like we're in one of those chess matches where you got to hit the clock.
Right. I was thinking, okay. And
normally you have a longer lead in. I don't know. It's not a great title because it doesn't tell you anything about the movie, for one. He also only tells stories about America, so I guess it's supposed to be like the world outside of wherever they are.
Yeah, I think world at that point, you know, people didn't do a whole lot of traveling. A lot of people, especially if, you know, guys in the Civil War, you know, that was the first time a lot of them had left their hometown and they traveled, you know, across the entire continent pretty much.
But yeah, but I don't understand if there's a sort of thematic connection between him showing all these poor people what's going on outside of the world that they live in, because we only see him go through Texas, which is gigantic. You know, it's an unbelievably huge state, and all these little towns are pretty cut off. Like, it takes weeks for him to get from one town to another on a little horse. But what that has to do with him you know, taking this girl home and his past in the Civil War. I mean, I just looked at it like this is just what his job was. You know, like, what's the importance of people hearing things from outside? They need something to cheer them up, I guess, or inspire them. But I don't see where that has to come into play for him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So what did you think of? Oh, good. Yeah.
I found those scenes to be disconnected from everything else. It's just what he was doing. You know, like, I don't see what telling everybody about the world does for him. How does it make him feel better? How does it deepen the bond between him and this girl? So you're right. Like, I don't understand why the focus was on that so much, so heavily. But
yeah, this is based on a book that I, of course, didn't read. And
what's a book?
It seems to be that, like, that kind of. What's a book?
I'm being facetious, but sort of not.
But also, no. I wonder if that's a theme that couldn't be better explored in that format. Like, it's a complex thing. Like, his story is not a simple one. We get a Reader's Digest version of it in this movie, but the idea that he used to be own a printing company. He would print newspapers for other people and disseminate information on a broad scale to everybody. And then now he's just doing it, you know, for nickels and dimes in, you know, little leaky barns here and there. And how that's made, you know, like there would be things I would think to explore with that sort of change in his fortune, and the nomadic and isolated lifestyle that he now leads, but there's not time to explore something as complex as that and as subtle as that, in a movie that has to have a fair amount of action, and sort of linear progression to it, you know, getting somebody from point A to point B, in 2 hours, and so I could see. You know, a Larry McMurtry style story talking to you about what a unique job this is, you know, but I could also see that it just, like, you can't do that in a movie, at least maybe in a, you know, in a series of some kind, but it doesn't have a connection to anything that goes on here. It's incidental to the plot. Overall, though, what did you think of News of the World?
I thought it was perfectly okay.
I'll have the extra medium, please.
Yeah, it was extra. It was an extra medium kind of movie. You could tell where everything was going to go probably 5 minutes before it happened, at least, you know, like, with absolute clarity. Like, I knew exactly what was happening the whole movie. No surprises, no shocks. It was fine, you know. Tom Hanks is Tom Hanks. He did a good job doing what he was supposed to be doing. They did a very good job, all the camera cuts and the camera work and the music was good. It's just that it doesn't hold my attention. I kind of drifted off a lot every time I was watching it. You know, it's one of those few movies where I finished the first hour and I stopped and went to bed and I watched the rest of it another hour, which I never do. It's just that I was like, this is not holding my interest. I'm tired. You know, I can pick up again later and I won't miss anything because the story is so familiar that, like, my brain just filled it all in anyway. And even when I was wondering if it was going to happen, whether him and the girl are stumbling along and they find where her family used to live, like the little settlement that had been raided by Indians, and their family had been murdered there and everything. And she goes in and finds, like, the little doll that used to be hers or her sister's or whatever. And I'm sitting here going, yeah, that's the doll, right? That's the doll you found? I mean, that's everybody's. A little girl always finds a doll in these abandoned things. Like, it's like the law of cinema that they're going to find some old symbol of their life, and it's always this little doll, you know. Okay,
yeah,
they're always creepy looking too. But I thought it was perfectly fine. you know, are there things to nitpick? Yes, of course. But it was all right. What did you think?
I think a couple of things. The first is, yeah, it was, you know, an entirely acceptable movie. It would be a nice, you know, I remember when we saw Ford versus Ferrari in the theaters last year, and you were like, hey, you know, what was the average age of the theater patron? And I was like, I don't know, about 72. And, you know, this would have been that kind of a thing. You would have had an older crowd going to see it, and, you know, they would have kind of enjoyed it. It would have been fine. You know, kind of a bit like, you know, what was that movie with Robert Duvall and Kevin Costner? Home Range?
Open Range.
Open Range, thank you. You know, which was not excruciatingly, but fairly boring until the end when you have, like, one of the best gunfights in a Western. I mean, certainly it's a modern movie, but, like, one of the best gunfights ever. Up to that point, it was kind of slow. And, like, this was like that, too. The first hour, like, the first 45 minutes were really slow. We kind of, mostly because you knew that, like, they were just setting it up. And, okay, so here's the thing. And then I watched to the end of the gun battle with the guys in the hills. And then I went, okay, I can stop here and go to bed. And I'll, you know, and I do that pretty frequently just because, you know, my kids are running around, so I don't have time to do this all the time. And, but it was really easy to do it here, whereas sometimes it's just like, okay, well, I have to, you know, not forget this is what happened just before I, you know, went to sleep. So yeah, it was fine. I felt there were a lot of missed opportunities that they could have taken, which really would have made it a very different movie. And I think they were. There was no way they would have done these things because it would have made the Native Americans look bad. And this movie seemed very intent on making sure that didn't happen. And that's sort of hard to do when you're talking about finding a girl who has been, so she's, you know, she's a German girl. Her parents, you know, dragged her across the ocean to make a life for themselves in rural Texas in like 1870 or whatever year it is. And the idea is that they murdered her entire family. And they talk about it at the end, the gruesomeness with which they murdered these people. And they kidnapped their child and they made her a part of the tribe. But, like, you know, not a real part. One of those things, and I haven't read about this for some years, but, like, this was a practice that they would do. They would subsume somebody into their tribe, but it was always like you stood out. You were blonde. You were, you know, fair skinned. You just, you know, you weren't a real blood version, a blood relative of the tribe. You were just part of it by force. And so, like, the only time you ever see the Indians, they're kind of like, I shouldn't say Indians, the time you see the Native Americans, they're, you know, of no threat whatsoever. You just find these people wandering in the desert in a sandstorm. They give them a horse and then move on. So there's no threat there. Even though they're kind of traveling through the hill country towards the end of the movie and, you know, they hear people singing and chanting off in the distance. And the girl says to him, even though he does not understand, they know we're here. And that's supposed to be ominous. And there's times when they're kind of moving through the landscape and the picture is like bright and sunny and pleasant, but the music is very ominous. But nothing comes of it. So the missed opportunities they have really would have been when she starts to remember things. Because in the middle of a conversation with him where they're talking in like their kind of pidgin version of each other's language, she begins to speak German out of nowhere. And he stops the horse dead and says, like, oh my God, you were just speaking German. And she realizes something and she kind of have like a flash. You imagine like something kind of wakes up in her brain. And they don't do that cheesy thing where like you see what she sees for a second and you get like a flashback of what happens. You just kind of see her looking terrified like, oh my God, they're dead. And that was kind of a powerful little moment, but then it was gone. And they go to the house, and they find the empty house, and there's no one there. You could have made it a horror film at that point. She walks in, and then she doesn't realize that behind her is like the maggot-ridden corpse of her father with his head bashed in or something like that. And like, you could do it in such a way to make it sort of gruesome and powerful. You know, both, you know, you don't have to show everything, but it can be, you know, a realistic and sort of more horrifying version of what the girl went through, because it's really her story here. But they don't ever do that because it would make the, you know, it makes certain characters in the story look bad. And they seemed intent on making sure that the Native Americans would be portrayed as, you know, pathetic victims. And not, you know, which is why they spend so much time in that, you know, weirdo buffalo killing town, you know, and they, so anyone that they spoke to was generally white and unhelpful. And, you know, the first thing he sees is he finds the body of the guy who was bringing her back to wherever. He was a black person, and they lynched him in the middle of the forest there. So there was a political tone about race in the movie that didn't belong there, because it was incongruous with the story that they were really trying to tell, which is about this girl and this guy and her experiences and his experiences. And they never get to explore those things because it's politically inconvenient to do so. So that's the first thought I had, which is kind of long.
It's a long thought to have, first. I think it comes down to the fact that there's been a lot of cowboy movies, and the cowboy era is not very long. It's a short amount of time in history, you know, for American cowboys. You know, the mid 1800s to like the late 1800s. I mean, 50, 60 years tops. In which you have territory that's not exactly settled, and you have territories instead of states, and then you have the Civil War that gets in there and all these kinds of stuff. I mean, it's not a long amount of time. So when people always show the movies, I mean, you've had so many that you can explore all these different aspects of it, but people always say, and they said it with this one, it's like, well, what part of cowboy history is it that we're trying to explore with this film? You know, which happens to every film. There is not time to show everything. You know, if I'm going to show you Victorian England, that's twice as long. That's at least 100 years. I can't show you absolutely everything about Victorian England in a movie. You know, Pride and Prejudice doesn't talk about the poor people in England. It talks about this middle class aristocracy. Okay, fine. So when you have a movie like this, it's like, what do we want to show? Because you have to leave some things out. You know, do I want to show Indians massacring people and literally ripping their scalps off their heads? Because I've seen movies like that, and it's terrifying. Do I want to see Confederate soldiers gunned down by Union soldiers after the war because they could get away with it? Because I've seen a movie like that, too. And that's horrifying. So we're only getting glimpses of these things throughout the film, because the film is so tightly focused on Tom Hanks getting this girl to her town. So as much as it's like all this stuff is happening around them, the story itself is very tightly focused on these two characters, so much so that it's boring when nothing happens and then predictable when something does happen, because it's some sort of external force that they have to get over. And like, you're right. Like, they have very few moments where they talk to one another and they learn things about each other. You know, oh, she can speak German. Oh, my God. For one thing, is because he tells her to ignore that stuff. You know, like, you're with me. Don't talk about being a Native American anymore. That part of your life is over. And also because she doesn't speak the whole movie almost, except in the Native American language. They don't really talk to each other. So there's a lot of him, like, talking to random characters and, like, speaking to her, and she just stares at him. You know, so those scenes are just, like, you're not quite sure what's going on between the two of them internally. And then all the external stuff is, okay, bandits, the bad town, sandstorms, engines. And that's about it. Until it's over.
Yeah.
You know? So we don't see, I mean, they could have done a whole lot of the fact that, you know, the South was an occupied territory after the Civil War. There were Union soldiers everywhere, basically enforcing martial law. And it became worse as time went on, you know, and within good reason, that you had this army that was basically bullying you around, and he had to show his loyalty papers, and they took your guns. And that's there, but it's not the focus, you know? So, like, what they chose to show in this film was the story of this guy and this little girl. And a lot of the stuff they left out, or to your imagination. I think a little bit too much. I mean, they blow past the fact that he was a Confederate soldier, you know?
Yeah.
It took me a minute, because I was like, was he a North soldier? I mean, in the popular consciousness, the Confederates are the bad guys. So,
also in reality.
Well, yes, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, your brain is automatically switched to he's a bad guy. And now being Tom Hanks helps with that. But at the same time, my first thought was like, well, he was the loser, right? Like, did he have slaves? You can't help but think that stuff.
Yeah. And his casting is not incidental. They wanted to have a sympathetic figure. I mean, there's nobody else that kind of makes this work without complicating it. I think appropriately. That, like, it would have worked with another actor, but you wouldn't have gotten as wholesome a feeling from the character than you did with Tom Hanks, because Tom Hanks doesn't play bad guys. He only ever plays good guys.
Right. I mean, being Tom Hanks, I think, overcomes a lot of that stuff. But at the same time, I mean, maybe my definition is wrong, but I don't think Tom Hanks is a character actor.
No, he's not. And let's talk about that for a minute, because that popped into my head. Tom Hanks is not a character actor at all. And let me ask you this question. Can you think of a movie that he has been in where the character that he was playing changed?
Maybe the guy in The Burbs. I had to go out on a limb here. I mean,
there's one.
Not who he plays.
There's one.
Yeah.
Big.
Well, isn't the kid doing most of that?
Well, that's sort of like the kind of cop out is that, like, he changes from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie because he learns about what it's like to be a grown up and how it's complicated and hard and oftentimes very sad. Like, there's so much of the, you know, typical 1980s suburban child's life that
it is sad. I ate half a box of Daddy Grahams today, so
it's been sadder lately, I'll tell you. But, like, you
it's
know,
it's been a rough year. Okay,
I mean, Big was marketed to you know, it was kind of that weird 80s thing where you could market a movie to kids that was really not for kids because there was the whole thing about sex in that movie, but, like, you know, the kid had a pretty good life, and he just felt like he wanted to be bigger because the grass is always greener. It's always going to be better when you're older, and he learns that that's not true at all. And so he has that moment at the end of the movie, and then he reverts back into a child, and now he can go. And now that child, which is kind of a different character, can go on to live his life with the information that he's gleaned from this magical experience. But that's it. Tom Hanks' characters don't change. He is, and that's not like necessarily a bad thing. There are basically two kinds of protagonists, the protagonist that changes throughout the story or the protagonist that changes other people. And the second one is harder to sort of write because you have to have complex side characters that don't that don't get in the way of the main character doing its thing. a nice sort of like amalgamation of the two would be like the Cat in the Hat, you know, where the Cat in the Hat is the kind of character that comes into a scene and changes the circumstances for the people, for the two kids whose house he barges into, but they have an effect on him too. And then like, it's one of those, it's a more complex character than you'd think. I don't mean like the Mike Myers movie. I just mean the book. yeah, I didn't see
I
that
mean,
movie.
If you wanted to look at it, I mean, if as Forrest Gump, he's basically the same guy from minute one, all
and
the way
and affects
to the end.
A lot of people around him.
Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he doesn't play those kinds of characters in terms of, like, he doesn't disappear into the role because he's just basically being himself, which is this good-natured, fatherly, aw shucks kind of guy, which he just has in almost every role.
Yeah.
You know, and I miss the funny Tom Hanks.
Everyone
you don't
does.
You don't see him anymore. He was great on SNL a few years ago.
A few years ago, that was like 20 years ago.
Yeah, I know. Like, I mean, when he was, I mean, he did that sketch with Black Jeopardy. Oh my God. And he had a MAGA hat on.
He's like playing dumb Tom Hanks. This is like a long time ago.
This is the one where he was wearing a MAGA hat and like a jean jacket, and he was like a Southern hick kind of guy. And all the questions are about, what, like what a black person would say, and he was doing it like, this is also what a dumb idiot white guy would say.
Yeah.
And they were basically the same. It was very funny.
Yeah. But like, you know, he was a comedic actor. He was a big goofball, and that's, you know, bosom buddies. And yeah. Big was so like that too. It was physical.
I mean, you're asking me to accept this guy as a Confederate captain, and it's hard. I mean, he's just not that kind of a person from what I know of him. It's like Leo DiCaprio. You know, I saw him in The Wolf of Wall Street the other day, and I'm like, why is Leonardo DiCaprio snorting blow off of that hooker's butt? That's weird. Like, it just didn't, he doesn't disappear into the role like some character actors do.
No, and look, that's not always necessary. Like, most of your big, you know, your leading men actors, they don't do that. They're not paid to do that. That's, you know, you don't get a lot of guys like that want to vanish into that stuff. It's fine. It's two different kinds of actors, character actors, and then, you know, leading men, movie stars. But this movie really required that. This is a very classic story of the reluctant hero being tasked with an honorable, it's the Mandalorian, for Christ's sakes. Like, that's what this movie is. It's the Mandalorian done in, you know, that's why they call that show a Western, because it is a Western. The difference is that, like, you know, and this was sort of hard with the Mandalorian too. Like, he changes subtly. He also influences the people around him. You know, season two of that show suffered because there was less interesting stuff happening with the Mandalorian and more, like you said, like stuff happening with the other characters who they're trying to pull in from other Star Wars franchise properties. But the reluctant side of that has to be there. And he never really was reluctant to do any of this. He just kind of said, okay, I'm going to do this. And he did it because he's a good person, not because he's a bad person. And yet deep down, he knows that this is the right thing to do. That's the kind of thing that you need for a movie like this. And you just don't get that with Tom Hanks, which is why I said before, like, this would have worked with another actor in it, but you would have had to explore something more complex than just he's a nice guy and let's go for a ride down this dangerous road together. You know?
Yeah, well, that's all that work of him being a Confederate soldier and then realizing the error of his ways and becoming like a good person was done ahead of time, you know, before the movie started. So it was definitely like, oh, he's just a good guy doing the best he can in a weird, crazy, lawless place. You know, I mean, you're right. He's not a bad guy who knows deep down what's good. He's always protecting her the whole time, you know. And that's a very Tom Hanks thing to do.
Yeah.
So it made it hard. It made it not hard to watch, but a little bit boring because
they were.
You know, it's the same problem I always have, and only because our father was very big into Westerns, and I asked him about it one time. You know, how these guys look like cowboys. And they don't. Like when we watched Tombstone, and the only one who looked like a cowboy was Sam Elliott. Like, why is that cowboy hanging out with all these weird Hollywood actors?
Sam Elliott. You know. There's nobody with a mustache, like, you know.
Or that voice.
And that voice, that gravelly. Mm. I mean, he has that voice in everything he ever was in. He had that in... A Star Is Born.
It's
for him to sound like that in A Star Is Born.
Yeah, like why is that cowboy hanging out with these pop stars? You know, like
I don't understand this.
And it was definitely, and they always do such a good job with the extras, like the people with bit parts. They look like cowboys because they get those people. So like Tom Hanks really stands out against a group of people who are like, you know. Crazy mustaches and big noses and bad teeth. I mean, that's what people look like. So
yeah, I like the kid that plays like that weird goofy simpleton.
Like
he was kind of an interesting character because he kind of didn't quite belong where he was, and he's a little shell shocked by the death of his brother. Like you got more interesting stuff out of that guy in 6 minutes of screen time. Than you did out of Tom Hanks' entire movie. You know, it's just...
It's always tough with these kid actors that are supposed to be, like, so traumatized that they don't talk and they don't show emotion. I've seen a bunch of movies like this now. And, like, it's hard when the girl's not supposed to be able to speak his language because there's this, you know, miscommunication, which ends up becoming... hand signals and yelling and things like that. And that's okay. But also, they're also supposed to be like traumatized. So all they ever have is this blank expression.
Yeah.
Which, you know, she did perfectly fine. She did a good job with that. But it makes it harder to watch because I don't know what she's thinking. I mean, neither does Tom Hanks, where he's just staring at it like, are you okay? Do you understand me? Blah, blah, blah. But it makes it harder for me because I'm just like, is this trip even worth it? Should I be watching this movie? I mean, I'm only here because I know she'll be with him at the end. But like, you got to give me something here. Like just this blank, you know, dead-eyed stare. It's hard to watch that stuff after a while.
Yeah, it's not very interesting. Like it would have been. So like, I like the fact that they had subtitles for her. Which I was sort of surprised that they did. They normally don't do that. They sort of tell the story from only the one person's point of view. And then it's just them frustrated with the, you know, the inability to talk to the girl who's obviously been, you know, emotionally scarred by her experiences. And but in doing that, they made a choice to tell two stories here. And they did neither one, really. Like, they wanted to tell the story of both people. Otherwise, why tell you what she, you know, why tell the audience what she's saying? You know, if the audience can understand her and her frustration and what she wants, you know, there has to be a reason to give that information to the audience and not allow the audience to try to figure it out. So at the beginning of the, or towards the beginning, when, I don't know what was happening there. He had like left her with those people and then came back and she had run away and she was like yelling at the Indians across a ravine.
She saw them and she was like, hey, you know, that's who I've been living with the last few years.
Yeah.
As far as she knew, that was home.
So she's yelling at them and you hear what she's saying. I am the daughter of so-and-so. I am, come take me back. I want to go home. Mm-hmm. If you watch that scene without the subtitles, you know, you're left to do a lot more work. you're left to like look at her face, because she's a pretty good actress, this little girl. And when she got when she had something to do, she was interesting. You know, when she's yelling for them and crying, you know, you kind of have to look at that and go, wait, she wants to go back to these horrible people who, you know, killed her family and kidnapped her? Yeah. You know, that's a heck of a Stockholm syndrome you have there. And, you know, but they don't do that. They give you all of the dialogue in text. So that tells me, all right, well, they want me to follow her story and watch her develop. But she doesn't really develop. She doesn't have that moment where it comes back to her and she makes a decision. And there's a moment in the trailer that got cut from the movie where it's just one line where Tom Hanks's character says, boy, you really know how to handle a horse. So I guess there's a scene where she rides a horse because presumably Indians were really great horsemen. And so they would teach their kids how to do that stuff. That never happened. I was waiting for that moment in the movie where like something happens and she comes and saves the day and shows, you know, and she does this in other ways too, putting the money inside the shotgun shells and being resourceful and that kind of thing. But she didn't have much of a journey. She remained the helpless character she was all the way to the end. Even and at the end, she was in as bad, if not worse, shape than she was when he found her. They had her tied to a post, and at gunpoint, they were making her like, yeah, I don't know, like toil in their little field. I'm like, Jesus, that's no good.
Yeah, it reminded me of a Star Trek episode of The Next Generation. It was an older one where this kid had been, he was living on some colony and it got attacked by aliens. Of course, the aliens looked like regular people with forehead ridges or whatever. And the aliens took him in and he lived with them for a bunch of years. And when those people, I think they died or they got captured or whatever, the Enterprise ends up picking him up and they say, like, well, now we should take him back to his aunt and uncle because his parents were killed on this colony. And the kid's been so integrated into the other culture that they spend the whole episode and they're like, you know, he's not adjusting to our way of life because he's been in their culture for so long. And I think they get like all the way to the aunt and uncle's door. And then they go, you know what? This is stupid. We should just bring the kid back to the culture that he was assimilated into because he's no longer part of this anymore. He's just not a human in terms of the way he behaves anymore. You know, he's got silly rituals or whatever it was. So you're right. Like the girl doesn't go through anything like that. And what's missing is those moments where Tom Hanks saves her from those men that try to buy her. Yeah. And do God knows what with her.
And, whore her out. They were making her into a prostitute.
Well, yes, that's thanks. It went on set. But anyway, he saves her from them. And then after that, she just becomes his partner. So like all the other times when they go through all these different things, he doesn't have to deal with her except make sure she's okay. Like they go to that weirdo town where they force him to read the bad news. at gunpoint, and like this like little local chieftain is in charge of this town. Nothing happens to her there. They don't threaten her in any way.
Yeah, that was a weird scene too, because like, you know, nothing happens to her there, which is it's supposed to be a terrifying place. You know, and something happens to her in the other town, which was a normal town, just filled with a couple of guys who wanted to, you know, kidnap this child into a different kind of slavery. And interestingly, in the evil town run by the racists, they don't try to, you know, rape the child, which is good. We should applaud that. However, that would kind of be right up their alley, given everything else we know about them. And then he does this weird thing where, like, he's there with this child he's trying to protect, and you know, all these people work for the bad guy, the bad boss, and the boss says, read this thing to them. Because presumably a lot of them can't read. And so now Tom Hanks' character has this weird dilemma. Do I put myself and my charge, the girl, in danger by refusing to read this guy? Or do I, you know, and then try and do something different? Or do I just suck it up, read the weirdo news, and then be gone with it? And he chooses to rebel against the guy and almost gets himself killed. So I'm kind of wondering, like, what was all that about? Like, it's sort of interesting in the sense that he's like, well, we could talk about, you know, what goes on here, or there's an interesting story about somebody else far away, and they become interested in that because he's a good storyteller. But it's risky, and it seems to sort of have no reward. Like, what does he think is going to happen exactly? And it kind of works out in their favor because the crowd overpowers the few armed guards that run the buffalo slaughtering camp. But I don't know, it seemed like a risky maneuver when your entire purpose in the film has been to safeguard this one person who you lose in the crowd and almost, you know, gets trampled by all these guys who trying to kill each other. So this is what I'm saying, like, there's a lot they wanted to say in the movie, but, you know, it doesn't match with what's actually going on. You know, and they sort of cornered themselves in and saying, we can't talk about the things that happened to the people. We can only talk about how Tom Hanks has decided not to be a Confederate and how these guys still are, and, you know, all of these different considerations about what they were really permitting themselves to talk about, you know, made for really bad storytelling.
I was reading a guy who was saying that basically, like, that is the kind of scene where he's reading, like, the news, and the guy's telling him, like, read about how great I am. And he goes, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. And all the people in front are saying, like, give us more from outside of the world. You know, we want to hear about other people. And it's like this hopeful, inspiring thing that can't be quelled by the guys with guns, about how people are very much, you know, they want news from the outside and they want to be inspired and led to something greater. And he said, I used to think that. And everything in the world nowadays basically leads me to believe the complete and utter opposite of this. You know, people don't want to hear this stuff that doesn't already conform to their worldview and doesn't affirm their biases, as they say. And I read that before I saw the movie, and I was completely inclined to agree. When I saw the scene, I was just like, well, this really doesn't match up with anything I've ever seen. Like, you know, I mean, just go online and you know, if you're not watching CNN or Fox News, then clearly you're either misinformed, quote, quote, or you're not having the story that you want told to you, you know? So, like, I wish that words had that kind of power and storytelling had that kind of power. I'm not quite sure that that's the way it is anymore. So it felt very anachronistic to me in the movie as well. Where I was like, you're right. I don't understand the benefit that Tom Hanks' character gets out of this. And also, I don't think this is how people really are anymore.
Anymore, no, certainly not. I mean, I do think that there was, you know, there was so little to do back then. There really was. Like, people forget, like,
well, you were busy working.
You worked all the time. You just worked.
Those buffalo aren't going to slaughter themselves.
They're not going to, you know, cut their own heads off and place those heads in, you know, in tanning beds to remove all the skin. And then, no, it's not going to work. So, yeah, like, people, you know, like, it really was. You worked. That's why, like, nighttime scenes in these movies always kind of make me laugh. It's like, there were no nighttime scenes. Like, people got drunk in the middle of the day. Like, you know, scenes in movies, you know, like this one that take place at night are bizarre because there was just so little light that you wouldn't, like, you went to bed when the sun went down because you had to get up at dawn and then work again. So, like, any kind of entertainment, somebody coming in to do this, books, papers, you know, people were fairly literate back then. Not very, but fairly.
No, not very. I always think of Deadwood because Deadwood did a very good job with this on HBO where, like, the town was basically empty during the day because they were all sifting for gold and prospecting. Like there were only the women and a couple of saloon owners like hanging around, and they'd be bored. And then the nighttime would come and everyone would show up and go, I need to be drunk now. And they would just get wasted, fall asleep by 10, and then get up with the sun the next day and do it all over again, you know. Yeah. Like,
but there's like a small window in there where you would burn candles just for light enough to do that. And then like you couldn't be out till 3 a.m. doing that, you know, like you'd run out of candle wax.
Right, they wouldn't be out till 3, and the people who were really up to no good, you know.
So. Yeah, they were generally doing all the murdering.
Yeah. Well, that's why a lot of the people in this, like at that scene, they had torches and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, look, for movies, that's what you do because it makes it look good. But I don't know. To me, all these night scenes were just there for effect. It was just kind of like it would have been like a dusk thing. You come in there, you listen to a guy tell you a story after you have dinner, and then you'd sleep and get up and do it all over again. I can kind of see people being interested in this as a kind of entertainment, whereas now, as far as news is concerned, people are generally looking for not information, but, you know, comfort. They're looking for, they get bits and pieces of information that they hear, sounds good to them, it resonates with them, they don't challenge anything, and they just kind of want more of that, because... religion has replaced both entertainment. Sorry, politics has replaced both entertainment and religion in different people to different degrees. And I think that, you know, to contradict the validity of your entertainment or your religion is hard. To contradict your politics is kind of easy, but when you've made them all the same thing, then you're not looking to learn. You're not looking to argue to refine your own ideas and change yourself. So this looks weird to us that people would sit there and want to hear stories about people from other places and debate them and talk about them. They may have, though, because, you know, people had other things in their lives to fill the holes that politics, you know, would try to seep into but couldn't. They were much more of a religious society back then. It was a much bigger part of their lives. That's all there was. That and death and disease and hard work and, you know, the occasional wedding and birth. So yeah, it was a really pretty mediocre film that was, I thought, shot pretty well. I thought it was very pretty. It was a good-looking movie.
Sure.
Interestingly enough, Paul Greengrass directed this.
Yeah, what did he do? A couple of Bourne movies or something?
He did the two Bourne movies that I don't like and that you would probably really hate because it's all that shaky cam stuff, which I thought was kind of clever for like 10 minutes and then I got really seasick. And then
I hate that.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. He did Captain Phillips with Tom Hanks. Captain Phillips! Captain Phillips. For those of you who don't know what we're doing when we talk about that, Tom Hanks is possibly the best podcast guest anybody could ever hope to have because he just likes to talk and tell stories. He's just an endlessly charming person. And he was talking on the Nerdist podcast like a decade ago about what it's like to go to press junkets and just talk to people. And he always liked talking to those guys because they didn't, you know, make him talk about the movie he was there to promote. He's got to shoot the shit about, it was some famous sports celebrity. I can't think of who it was. Maybe it was Muhammad Ali. I don't know. Or a baseball star of some kind. But, like, there was this big ad back in the 60s or 70s for blasting caps, like a PSA. Where, like, kids were finding blasting caps everywhere around construction sites in cities. And, like, there was this big PSA, and they got this I have to Google it now, but this famous athlete to go on TV and tell kids, if you see these things, don't touch them. And they had a half-an-hour conversation about this guy doing a blasting caps public service announcement. He's a funny guy that likes to talk. And I lost my train of thought with that one. I love when I do that.
Well, the point is with like he said, like,
oh, right, yeah, yeah, yeah,
press junkets, like where you just sit in a chair and then another guy would come and interview and ask you the exact same questions, basically to get sound bites for their show, like Entertainment Access or whatever. Whatever it was called. He goes, and then I would do it in Australia, and the Australian guy was like to the point. So he's like, I'd sit down, and the guy with the Australian guy would sit down in the chair and ask me about the movie and go, so Captain Phillips, like, tell me about it, you know, like they wouldn't ask any questions. They would just say, would just okay, say tell me now.
So, and then the title of the film and then wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually, you know, so I had a friend of mine I went to high school with who for a while that was his job. He worked for, I don't know what show or, you know, news channel, but like, he got to go to a bunch of press junkets, and then, like, there's this great video of him on his Instagram reels where he's, it's like a series of interviews of him talking to like Sandra Bullock and Robin Williams, and like, but he made it a point never to ask them about the movie that they were in, because they were always sitting, you know, in front of a giant cardboard poster of the movie. And he would just sit there and, like, tell jokes with them. And, like, you know, he had this whole thing with Robin Williams where Robin Williams said he looked like Rachel Maddow. I thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever heard. But, like, yeah, I always think of BJ whenever I think of Captain Phillips, because he made it a point never to do anything like that. And just kind of like, I've got you for 5 minutes, and you're a pretty big movie star, so let's just have fun, and I'll put it on my reel.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, and that's what good podcasts are like, you know?
Yeah. But this was a Paul Greengrass movie, and he's done other movies, but I guess this is his first Western. I was just surprised that it didn't have too much of that sort of shaky cam thing, and it took advantage of the scenery that they were in, and they shot it like an old Western where you get those John, you know, Houston vistas going. And you know.
Yeah, I think you can help but do that when you're shooting a Western. Even that terrible Lone Ranger movie had some great views. I mean, you just can't help but show off, you know, the mountains and the deserts and everything. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, people lived out there.
I know. Every, you know, like that really mediocre movie Maverick with Mel Gibson. There's a scene in that movie where
I haven't seen that in so long.
Yeah, there's a scene in that movie where, like, they're standing in like Yosemite next to like a giant waterfall. He turns to the Indian guys, "Boy, you guys can sure pick these spots. Like, this is gorgeous." He just draws attention to it. It's an underrated movie.
Oh yeah, I should watch that again. It's been I haven't seen it in so long.
Starring Alfred Molina as the bad guy.
Oh, was it? Was it?
Oh yeah. Oh, he's great. A hammy, goofy movie, and you know, then there's Jodie Foster, sexless, boring Jodie Foster, which I'm
okay with that.
I've
sexy Jodie Foster isn't any better, so
no, like I've just never liked Jodie Foster in things like she's good in Silence of the Lambs, but the whole thing in that movie is that everybody's like her. Weird, and like she's a lesbian, so like that's all the movies she plays. She doesn't play a lesbian, she plays a straight person. But like in Silence of the Lambs, like the way that movie was shot was like it was a lot of like direct to camera, weird kind of like it's a very unsettling film like that. And the whole point of that was they wanted you to feel like her, like all the men were kind of ogling her and they were all making her uncomfortable. And it works in that film because that's not how she swings, and so it she didn't have to play too hard at being uncomfortable by all the male attention. And in Contact, she's great too, because she kind of has a relationship with Matthew McConaughey, who's got enough charm for the two of them, so it kind of evens out at that point.
She's a wet blanket in that movie.
But she's like her kind of weird, passionate, monomaniacal attitude is it's pure Carl Sagan, who's, you know, it was just a science nut in a good way. I certainly one of the most important astrophysicists of the last 100 years. And thankfully, he didn't run around ruining pop culture like other astrophysicists that won't be named here. But anyway, did you hear how he tried to screw up Christmas this year?
No.
Something about female reindeer. I don't know. It's
He's like that annoying friend that won't go away.
He's the kid.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
He's the kid in class that reminded the teacher about the test or the homework she forgot to give out. That's who Neil deGrasse Tyson is.
And like, I'm a teacher, and even I don't like that kid. So
yeah, no. Because we have to grade that test or the homework that you're, you know, turning in. Yeah. So
yeah.
Anyway, this movie was fine.
It was fine. I don't know if I'd have gone to see it in theaters. You know, I was looking at the other day, like, didn't I text you that, like, we saw so many more movies last year because the pandemic just forced us to watch them at home?
Yeah.
So we didn't have to go out. I think we did twice as many movies as we did in 6 years in 1 year because there was nothing else to do.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, this is another one of those things where it's like, maybe we would have gone to see it, but I don't know if I would have been happy about it. And I think now that the pandemic has, like, brought that into focus, where it's like, so, like, think about it beforehand. Like, I would have gone and been like, eh, it was just okay. Well, what are you going to do? There's $13, whatever. But now that we've been given the option to watch things at home, I think now I know the difference between, like, okay, that was $12, whatever, versus, like, I can't believe I wasted $12 on that. I could have just stayed home and watched Star Trek again on Netflix and been happier.
No. Yeah, you kind of you're making more than a monetary investment at that point, because you got to leave your house and go and park your car and sit down.
You got to do it in 2 hours,
yeah,
or more. Like I watched this over 2 days, but if I'm going to the theater, I can't tell them to pause the projector. So,
that's the benefit of this, is that the flexibility, you know, is there to, you know, there's pros and cons, all of it. Like, one of the things I do think I miss is that, like, I wouldn't take my phone out in the middle of a bad movie in a theater and start texting or looking at Instagram. If I was alone, maybe, if, you know, my theater over here is or was, but I'm not sure if it's still open anymore, pretty small. And so if it was like a random Thursday night where I wasn't, you know, when it was empty, yeah. But, like, it forces you to really pay attention if you're in that crowded experience. And now I can be much more distracted much more easily, and I'll forget certain things, or I'll just tune it out. It's not that important. And you couldn't do that before. Now you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, I still don't like splitting up a movie like that, because they're not meant to be watched that way. They're not TV shows, but you're right. I mean, I do look at my phone or whatever, because it's like, especially with this one where there were just these long establishing shots of, you know, the Texas plains and everything. I was like, okay, fine.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I judge how good a movie is just, am I looking at my phone? If I'm not, then I'm enjoying it. If I am, you know, and sometimes, like, I think I should actually watch more movies on my phone. Although now my iPhone has a picture-in-picture thing, so I can actually, like, be watching a movie in, like, the upper, you know, in, like, a 1-inch by, you know, 1/2-inch rectangle in the corner of the screen, and just be going through Twitter on the rest of it. So that's kind of dangerous. But like, I watched Shithouse on my phone, and I really liked that movie. But I wonder if that, like, by forcing myself to watch it on the phone and not watch it on a second device and then use the phone as the distraction, if that helped me at all. Like, maybe it did. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when you pull out your phone, and my kids in school do this, you're basically admitting that there's something more interesting that you're willing to look at. So, or that you're looking for something more interesting. So,
yeah.
It's like throwing in the towel, basically.
Well, if you guys have any thoughts about the news of the world, which you have to say it like that, like it's 1947.
Yeah.
then you should let us know on Twitter or Instagram. We are at Three Drinks In Pod. You can tell us on Facebook, or you can email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us on all or at least most streaming services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Leave reviews, tell your friends. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. As always, please drink responsibly, and we will talk to you all next time.
Take care.
Bye.